Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Governor Jared Polis is doubling down on his decision to free Tina Peters by firing the clemency board members who urged him not to do it, and then revealed that the clemency board was unanimously opposed to turning Peters loose. Two members of the clemency board wrote an op-ed for the Denver Post last month saying that their board had twice unanimously denied Tina Peters' request for clemency. They also said that Polis stepped in front of other applicants who deserved clemency and had exhausted their appellate rights in order to grant clemency to Peters. And the governor's letter firing the two members, he said that they had breached confidentiality by talking about the board's votes.
I think it's interesting that the governor says we violated confidentiality by revealing how the board voted. But I think we have to be honest about what that means. What he's saying is that the public doesn't have the right to know that his own advisory board told him no twice unanimously before he made the decision to pardon Tina Peters. And that's not protecting a process, that's protecting himself from scrutiny.
I do feel bad about speaking up if any of the other board members are disappointed with us, you know, speaking truth to power and sharing this background. But I really have a feeling that that the person who's upset is the one that was using our board as kind of backing for a politically unpopular and unjust decision.
Tina Peters walked free a month ago and, to the surprise of absolutely no one, made it clear she was not actually remorseful and immediately began claiming again that America's elections are rigged. As Colorado Democrats say good riddance to Governor Polis, they have overwhelmingly picked Attorney General Phil Weiser to be his successor. Weiser beat Senator Michael Bennet by more than 12 percentage points last night, an astonishing turn in a race that Weiser was thought to be trailing by 30 points earlier this year. Seeing that Colorado's elected just one Republican governor in the last half century, Weiser is almost certain to be Colorado's next governor. My interview with him in a moment. New ballot returns in Denver within the last hour extend Democrat Socialist Malat Kyros' lead over Congresswoman Diana DeGette to more than 13 points. DeGette held that seat for 30 years. She didn't even show up at her watch party last night. Conceded today via video message more than 14 hours after the race was called. Kyros will also be my guest here in a moment. Even Republicans will tell you their gubernatorial primary is a race to be the runner-up in November, but it's too close to call now. Ministry leader Victor Marks has pulled ahead of State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer in the most recent batch of ballots. Marks had an enormous fundraising advantage and the backing of evangelical megachurches. But that race, at the moment, is headed to an automatic recount. And in Colorado's super competitive 8th congressional district, Democrats have nominated State Rep Manny Rutenel, who used to support universal health care, used to oppose fracking, and used to refuse to eat meat as a vegan. But he has found new views on all of those things as he runs in that swing district against Republican Congressman Gabe Evans. I spoke today with Phil Weiser, who's likely to be Colorado's next governor, about his come-from-behind win, his message to fearful conservatives, and what he'd say to progressives who expect him to help move Colorado to the left.
I always believed that voters would get to focus on the race, and Colorado voters voting this primary were going to make an informed decision. And my belief was when they made that informed decision, it was going to be good for us.
Republican primary for governor right now is too close to call. Does it matter who Republicans nominate? I want to ask you this for this reason. You're a Democrat about to run a race against Republican. But do you think Colorado would be better served if it had a more functional and competitive Republican Party?
My background is in antitrust law. I believe in competition. Competition makes us stronger. It's not healthy for any state to have one party who's dominant because another party is dysfunctional. And to that end, if the Republicans aren't putting forward functional Republican candidates, it makes my job harder because I've got to look harder for that counterargument. If the people of Colorado get to see that debate, it's better. But if one party, like the Republican Party right now, is unable to be organized, unable to be funded, obviously it makes it harder, and I think we're all worse off for that.
A lot of progressives in Colorado are jubilant today. Some of them supported you, some of them didn't support you, some of them won other races, so on and so forth. There are a number of progressives, as well as Republicans, who fear the idea that the store is going to be open now for progressive ideas in Colorado, that Jared Polis was the stopper on that stuff, and now you or Michael Bennett would have just kind of given progressives free rein. What would you say to those progressives and conservatives in Colorado?
Once you get to know me, what you're going to know is there's a place for you. I'm going to listen to you. And one of the mistakes that happens in politics sometimes is people position these issues as absolute polarities, when a lot of times there's lots of shades of gray, or there are third options that both sides can say, you know what, I could live with that. So I believe in dialogue. Conservatives are at the table. As for progressives, I understand some of your values. And part of what was so frustrating for them with Governor Polis is they felt shut out. They felt like there was no conversation. And so my answer isn't going to be wait to see if I veto the bill. It's going to be, hey, let's talk about it. Let's figure out a solution.
My full conversation with Phil Weiser is on the next YouTube channel and on 9news.com. Tonight, U.S. Senator Michael Bennett is any of us who have ever been in a job that we hate, applied for another job, and didn't get it. He's going back to work in Washington for another 2 years. Here's Politics Guy Marshall Zellinger.
He got caught up in a progressive way.
Immediately after conceding the race for governor, Senator Michael Bennett.
Well, we'll see. We'll figure it out.
He was consoled by his supporters, who saw the positive in a losing race.
You're held in public servant. You must have something left in the Senate. That must be what this is about.
Is Michael Bennett doing a really good job already in the Senate? And I think that question was answered. I felt like voters wanted him to stay in the Senate.
Political strategist Alvina Vasquez does not see Bennett's primary loss as the end of Bennett, the public servant.
We still have to do bipartisan relationship building in the Senate, and if you have too many people in Congress building new relationships, it's not good for Colorado.
You know, I don't see how he comes back from this.
Former Republican state representative turned unaffiliated Cole Wist hosts the Politics is Personal podcast with Democratic former state representative Leslie Herod.
Is he done? There's many politicians that have lost races. Us both as well. And that does not mean that we're done in Colorado politics.
I think any of the congressional delegation could be vulnerable.
Wist feels Bennett played his hand of not wanting to go back to Washington. Herod thinks the message from the primary results is to listen to younger voters.
What this says, though, for the party is that don't take young people for granted. Don't sit on your laurel, rest on your laurels and think we have to always play to the middle, because that's not what people want. People want to see Democrats take action.
There will be a long list of accomplishments that Michael Bennett has delivered for the state of Colorado as U.S. Senator that no one else will have.
Former Colorado House Speaker Alec Garnett endorsed Bennett in the primary and cautioned the future success of the Colorado Democratic Party may be based on the number of races with primary challenges.
If the Democrats only focus on fighting each other, in 4 years or so, the pendulum could start to slightly shift. I know no one believes that's possible, but attacking each other will weaken the Democratic Party over time.
Bennett has turned down my requests for interviews over the last 24 hours. The last sitting senator to lose a primary for governor was in Texas in 2010. Kay Bailey Hutchison served her final 2 years in the Senate, just like Bennett has coming up, and she did not run for re-election, Kyle.
All right, Marshall, thank you. Wildfires burn across this hot and dry state after our dry winter with record low snowpack. There's the Aspen Acres fire in Pueblo and Custer counties. That's the largest currently, more than 55 square miles, no containment. Neighborhoods nearby are evacuated. On the Colorado-Utah border, some progress has been made containing the Snyder fire, which has burned 47 acres. Three firefighters died while working that on Saturday. Two others were injured. So this week's Word of Thanks microgiving campaign will support the families of those fallen firefighters and other wildland firefighters injured or killed in the line of duty. The Wildland Firefighter Foundation is based out of Idaho. This is a rare exception to our rule of supporting Colorado-based nonprofits. But this nonprofit is the go-to organization for helping the families of fallen firefighters and supporting injured wildland firefighters. Within hours of those line-of-duty deaths of those firefighters who were stationed in Rifle, Colorado, this organization went to work. They assist families of the fallen with travel and funeral costs. They help injured firefighters with financial aid. They offer long-term support like mental health help to firefighters who lose colleagues. They assist the out-of-state firefighters who come into Colorado to fight fires and to protect us. And they help the firefighters from Colorado who go out across the West to protect people in other states. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to get the link to donate. You've proven even $5 helps with $18 million in giving that way. I'll never ask you to give if I don't, so I'll match the first 50 donations of $5 to get us going. More than 8,000 of you are signed up to make a monthly pledge to the Word of Thanks Fund. You put in your info one time each month. Your donations automatically split among all the nonprofits we feature, starting recent weekly microgiving campaigns with $50,000 of your generosity. A major construction project at MSU Denver is changing the face and the future of that campus in the heart of the city. Malak Kiro said something striking about Congresswoman Diana DeGette right after she beat her. And I'll ask Kiro about one particular attack that impacted her family. Next. Democratic socialist Malak Kiro shocked the political world with her decisive upset of Democratic Congresswoman Diana DeGette of Denver. I spoke today with Kiro about heading to Congress, where most members won't share her views, and some striking things that I heard at her victory party and in some attack ads. You clearly have the ability to organize and motivate people who think like you do. Do you have the ability to work with people who have diametrically opposite views?
Yes, absolutely. You know, some of the voters that we've brought onto our campaign to support our campaign were folks that were in opposition to us in the beginning. And again, it's about sitting down, having a conversation about what kind of a world do we want to live in? What kind of a country do we want to see? And sitting down, having that conversation about what those solutions might look like. That's what a democracy is supposed to look like. And that's what I'm really most looking forward to doing.
Last night at your victory party, you thank Congresswoman DeGette for her service, which is something that winning politicians say even when they don't mean it. But then you also said that you appreciated what she did to build this community that welcomed your family when you immigrated here from Ethiopia. That struck me as the kind of thing that you would not say if you didn't really mean it. Why was it important for you to say that publicly?
I think it's really important because I need folks to understand that this race and the reason why I got into this was not to do with DeGette as a person, right? I have a lot of respect for her and the work that she's done. My fight is with the campaign finance system. My fight is with the corruption in our government that's preventing us from actually delivering on the policies that would support working families. And so I wanted to make sure we took that moment to, give honor to her service and the work that she's done.
There were attack ads that ran against you in this race that basically said, you're not from here, you don't belong here. You grew up in the Denver metro area, right? Like it wasn't real subtle what those ads were saying or what they were trying to suggest to voters. I'm sure you have a thick skin because you're a candidate. What did your family think about those attacks?
That was really tough for them to hear, especially because this is the city that my parents chose when we first immigrated to the country because of how vibrant it was. And you know, they believed that it would welcome us with open arms, and it has, right? The city of Denver is a place that I call my home, and no one will be able to ever take that away from me. But to be honest, I was more upset about the implications of that ad because, you know, what about all of the Denverites that have moved from places all across the country or from places around the world as well, who've just recently called Denver their home? You know, to me, it doesn't matter how long you've been here. It matters how long you want to stay. And that's why my commitment is to making sure that this city and our country is one that's affordable for working families and for young people and their ability to actually make a dignified life.
Malak Kiros's critics claim that she is anti-Semitic for her anti-Israel views. Democratic gubernatorial nominee Phil Weiser is the son of Holocaust survivors. Today, Kiros and Weiser both told me that they are willing to sit down privately to discuss their views on this complicated issue. Their full interviews are on 9news.com and the Next YouTube channel. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi is along now, and with wildfires burning across the state, the concern is always the next possible start.
And unfortunately, we are still looking at that high fire danger into tomorrow, Kyle, with that red flag warning. This will continue into tomorrow for most of the high country. I will pass along a little bit of good news, though, is that winds will generally decrease as the week wears on. We're starting to break down the overall pattern that is leading to this persistent fire danger. But unfortunately, we're going to see that high fire danger along and west of I-25 in through the mountains tomorrow. But winds mostly on the lighter side tomorrow, which is a little different compared to yesterday, but today and yesterday, but still a little bit gusty along and south of I-70 in particular, a little gusty on the eastern plains. And unfortunately, we saw those smoky skies in Denver mostly because of the Gold Mountain fire that is the one burning near Ouray. We're going to see plenty of smoke across particularly central and northern Colorado as we get southwest winds that'll bring in that smoke. Highs today, 89 in Denver, 90s and even close to 100 on the eastern plains. And those temperatures, we head over the next 7 days as we go back here, going to be mostly in the low 90s with a chance for storms perhaps on Saturday on the 4th of July itself, but a better chance for storms on Sunday.
It's pretty exciting because this is my campus, so we get to help add a part of history.
Students are going to be able to live on campus at MSU Denver, thanks to the work of fellow students. That's next. A huge construction project at MSU Denver is changing the future of that campus and helping students build their own careers at the same time. Byron Reed has that.
Construction takes planning.
The biggest key to the success on this particular project was all the upfront planning that we did.
It's what got MSU Denver junior Gage Lydiard and senior Ivan Luna thinking about what's next.
Going into construction, hopefully with PCO, it's a great company, a great opportunity.
Hopefully I get to keep pursuing my career with PCO and yeah, great company to work for.
Let's go right here.
The two are part of the school's construction management program that's been busy building a pipeline to future careers.
So we send them out to be interns at different companies, and PCL has taken on two of my students for the summer here to work on campus on the project.
Carolyn McGarry is the Construction Project Management Degree Program Director at MSU Denver. The school places students into internships to gain work experience with hands-on training.
They're doing everything from a project engineering standpoint. So they're helping look at the schedules, look at the budget, look at how everything's coordinating with all of the different trades on site.
Lydiard and Luna are helping PCL construction crews raise Summit House, the university's first student housing community. The 12-story mixed-use residence hall will provide housing for hundreds of students in the heart of downtown Denver.
And then when they graduate, they can drive by here and not just be like, hey, this was my campus, but hey, I built that. That's still standing.
They're taking all these real life experiences and then they're gonna go take them back to school, but then come back to us and, you know, use that info to have a good career.
Yeah, this is a GoPro 360.
For Luna and Lydiard, the groundwork they're laying today will become part of the campus experience for other students planning their futures.
It's pretty exciting because this is my campus, so we get to help add a part of history.
For next,
I'm going to say I was part of that.
I'm Byron Reed.
Goes without saying, residence hall is a major shift for a school long known as a commuter campus. That new building set for completion summer of next year. Back with your feedback next. As fires burn across Colorado and firefighters mourn the loss of three of their colleagues killed on the Western Slope, we're supporting the nonprofit Wildland Firefighters Foundation, which supports injured firefighters and the families of the fallen. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to join me in donating. The Wildland Firefighters Foundation is already working to support the families impacted by the three deaths related to the Snyder Fire. They serve firefighters and their families throughout the West as those firefighters protect our communities. A note about our election coverage from a viewer named Chuck, who writes, "Your election coverage last night was laughable." Sounds bad, but Chuck continues. You gave the number of votes, percentage points between candidates, the debate clips. However, your sense of humor in covering the election made it an event and not the same dull reporting. That's what he means by laughable. Chuck writes, it's a breath of fresh air in politics. Best election coverage I've ever seen. Well, thank you, Chuck. That's very nice of you. There's a huge team of people here behind and in front of the scenes who put together our election coverage every year. And I'm glad that you not only found it informative, but also enjoyable. There's no reason why this stuff has to be a sad slog. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.